I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to tell you another story. For the last year, we've been living with the shadow of COVID-19. We really need some hope. The vaccines seem to offer some possibility, but there are new variants. Cases keep rising, and we've lost some people we loved in the last year. The next few months are looking maybe better, but the future is still shadowed. Yet, it is nearly Easter, and Easter is about hope. So I'd like to share a story of hope with you. Now, you've all heard the story of Jacob, his son Joseph, the coat of many colors, Joseph's brothers selling him into slavery, Jacob's grief when he thinks his son has been killed by wild animals, and that big joyous reunion in Egypt when Jacob sees his son alive after having thought him dead. That is a story worthy of a Netflix miniseries, full of intrigue, power, betrayal, even a little sex, and ultimately a joyous finale. It's a story that offers hope in the face of seemingly endless calamity. But that is not the story I want to tell you. I'll leave that one to Netflix. I want to tell you a story about another Jacob and his son Joseph. It's sort of an Easter story. Well, not really an Easter story. It's kind of a pre-Easter story. But even if it is sort of a pre-Easter story, it is definitely, absolutely a story of hope. So for the next few minutes, grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine, sit back, relax, and let me tell you a story. Let's step back a little over 2,000 years to a hillside east of Jerusalem. It is early evening, and campfires are springing up all over the hillside because this is Passover, and Jerusalem is overflowing with Jews from all over Israel. Around the campfires are groups of people sharing the news and telling stories, laughing and enjoying the company of family and friends. After all, Passover is the biggest holiday in the Jewish year, and this Passover has been full of rumors and gossip and intrigue. And we're going to one of those campfires. We're going to the one over by that tree, next to that little stone wall. The group around that campfire is not like the others. No one is talking. Occasionally, someone seems to sob. Their faces are all blank, save for a tear here and there, as if everything good about life had been torn away from them. And one of the men in that group, an old man with tears on his face, is the Jacob of our story. Jacob is leaning against the little stone wall. And into the silence at that campfire, in a low voice that could barely be heard at first, Jacob begins to speak. Yachim and I were so pleased with the match of our children, his eldest Mary and my eldest Joseph. They would make a beautiful couple, and they would give us grandchildren and bind our families together forever. But one night, Joseph came home so full of anger, he couldn't speak. I asked him what was wrong, but he simply looked at me with a face full of rage, and he took his cloak and he went into the night. And a short while later, Yaakov, my old friend, came to me with tears on his face, and he said to me, "I'm sorry." Then, without a word, he went back to his home. And I lay awake nearly all that night wondering what was wrong. Had something happened to Mary? Why the rage in Joseph's face? Why the strange apology from Yaakov? It was mid-morning the following day when Joseph returned. He had Yaakov with him, and they came into my workshop and stood in the middle of the wood shavings from an oxen yoke I was working on. Gone were their pained faces, replaced with wonder and joy and perhaps hope. And the words came out of Joseph in a rush. "Mary is with child, and the child will be the Messiah. Last night an angel of God came to me and told me I must take Mary as my wife. I am to protect the child as he grows to become the Messiah. The Messiah that all creation has waited for." Then Yaakov spoke and told of a similar crazy dream of an angel visiting Mary. And I wanted to believe them. My son and my friend, they both looked so hopeful. I am a simple carpenter. I know wood and chisels and hammers and pins. I am no rabbi, but I am a good Jew, and I am of the house and line of King David himself. And I do know the scriptures because I listen to them as they're read in the synagogue. And I know that the Messiah will come from Bethlehem, from the village where I was born. But I was the youngest son. There was nothing in Bethlehem for me. I moved here to Nazareth before Joseph was born. No. This is all crazy talk. Now it was my turn to be angry. "Joseph, you have been deceived. Think, we live here, not in Bethlehem. The Messiah cannot be born here. The Messiah cannot be the son of a carpenter. If Mary is with child, she has been unfaithful. There will be no marriage." And with that, I stomped out of my shop. It was my turn to be filled with rage. We had been betrayed. I don't know where I walked for the next few hours, as my anger simmered. But at midday, I found myself in the village square as a group of Roman soldiers rode in. One of them stood in his saddle and read a proclamation. "Caesar Augustus has decreed a census be taken of all the earth. Every firstborn man of age is hereby required to return to his ancestral home to be counted." I was stunned. My anger drained away. I turned and saw my son Joseph on the other side of the square. And he smiled that lopsided smiles of his. And I stared back at him with wonder and perhaps hope. The Messiah? Two days later, Joseph left to fetch Mary and go to Bethlehem. Somehow, Joachim and I knew this was something we could share with no one but each other. We didn't even discuss it between ourselves. Except that sometimes, Joachim would look at me and smile and raise an eyebrow. And I would smile back and whisper, "The Messiah?" For a few weeks, we were filled with an indescribable hope. Then our hope died. News came of Herod's soldiers killing every male child under two in and around Bethlehem. Many mothers and fathers died trying to protect their children. As the weeks turned into months and Joseph and Mary did not return, we knew that they too had died trying to protect a child they thought was to become the Messiah. Our hope was replaced with a deep grief. But not only had the promise of the Messiah been too good to be true, I had lost my son Joseph. Joachim had lost his daughter Mary. The grief that we shared then was nearly as heavy as the grief all of us around this fire share now. It was 3 years later, in early spring. I remember that afternoon absolutely clearly. I was shaping the lid of a scroll chest for our rabbi. The wood was stubborn, and I was having trouble getting the lid planed so it would fit properly. Finally, I pushed the plane forward over the face of the wood, and a perfect shaving curled up from the grain. As I looked up from that perfect shaving, standing before me was my son Joseph, wearing that lopsided smile he'd had since he was a child. And holding his hand was a little boy, about 3 years old, who said, "Papa, is he your papa?" Joseph nodded and said yes. And the little boy smiled at me, a smile that lit up the room. Joseph told me of another visit from the angel and of his escape into Egypt. And as he told me the story, that little boy played in the wood shavings on the floor of my shop. And Yahweh, the God of Israel, restored my hope in the Messiah. Jacob to stop speaking. Still leaning against the little stone wall, he stared into the flames in silence. Then he stood, picked up a bit of wood, and put it in the fire. Then he turned to the group, and in a stronger voice, he said, "My heart has been ripped out. I stood with you in the crowd today and watched as they nailed Jesus to that cross. I saw the centurion shove a spear through his side. I saw Jesus breathe his last. I know he has been placed in a tomb. Jesus of Nazareth is dead." Yet, I know angels appeared to the shepherds of Bethlehem. I know hundreds have been healed. I know a dead girl has been brought back to life. I have seen the learned Pharisees of Jerusalem left speechless. I know an angel appeared to my son's wife, Mary. And I know an angel spoke to my son, Joseph, not once, but twice. After I had lost all hope, when I had finally accepted that Herod's soldiers had killed my son, his wife, and a promised baby, I know that my son stood in my shop fully alive, holding the hand of a 3-year-old boy. A little boy who smiled at me with a smile that lit the room with joy and restored all my hope. I do not know what God has done today. I don't understand how that little boy could be nailed to a cross. The grief I feel makes it hard to even breathe. But my hope was restored to me when my son, his wife, and a little boy, all of whom I had thought to be dead, were suddenly alive. And I will cling to that hope and trust that somehow God will turn this immense grief to immeasurable joy. Jacob sat down then, leaned back against the stone wall, and with a determined look on his face, spoke no more. On the third day, Jacob had returned home to Bethlehem. He was in his shop, working on a piece of particularly stubborn wood. And suddenly one of the boys of the village ran in and said, "It's crazy, but some of his followers are saying Jesus has risen from the dead." And the old man, Jacob, looked up startled. But then he smiled, and he pushed the plane forward over the face of the wood, and a perfect shaving curled up from the grain as tears of immeasurable joy began flowing down his cheeks. This is just a story. It is a product of my overactive imagination, pondering a few lines of scripture. Yet, in a few days, it will be Easter morning, and we will remember the news that Jesus of Nazareth really has risen from the dead. We truly have a hope that reaches far beyond the next few months. It is a hope that reaches into eternity. May tears of immeasurable joy flow down your cheeks.